भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
Put a bookmark in my book and now they gave me a different book. Anybody know where we were? This voice changed my book. That category of substance. Really? I don't remember doing the soul, mind, or any of that kind of stuff. That was in Nyaya.
Yes.
Yeah, no, we're into Vaisheshika now. Okay, I remember the infinite regression. Okay, I think we're on Akash. Okay, let's start with Akash. Okay. Akash, ether. There are four kinds of atoms. Atoms of earth, atoms of water, atoms of fire, and atoms of air. Each having its own peculiar qualities. Akash, ether, the fifth substance, is the substratum of the quality of sound. It is not made up of atoms. Akash is also translated as space. Sound can be perceived, but Akash cannot be perceived because it lacks two conditions necessary for the perception of an object: perceptible dimension and manifest color. Akash is unlimited, so it does not have a perceptible dimension, and it is formless, so it does not have any color. Therefore, Akash cannot be perceived, but it can be inferred from the perception of the quality of sound which it contains. It cannot be said that sound is the quality of time, direction, soul, or mind, because these exist even when there is no sound to qualify them. Therefore, there must be some other substance that has the quality of sound in it. That substance is called Akash. Akash is one and eternal because it is not made up of parts. It does not depend on any other substance for its existence. It is all-pervading in the sense that it has an unlimited dimension, and its quality, sound, is perceived everywhere. So here we can start seeing that where this philosophy is diverging quite a bit from, the general standards that would be established within the Veda, or at least the Vaishnava understanding of the Veda, is that and the other four because they're atoms, then they can be built into something and broken down, then their existence is then in one particular category, while the Akash then is unlimited. Okay, so we see that there's this element where he's establishing the eternality of the atoms and of the Akash. But he's not actually, up to now, showing the source of these, because they seem to be separate from everything else. Right? Just like in Nyaya, then, the Lord, even though he's the controller of the material energy is separate from him. Right? Does that make sense? So you see, it has the fault then of the material elements of religion, where they accept a God who's the all-controlling and the source of everything, but at the same time, the material energy functions separately. So it has a similar fault, right? But the fault is much more sophisticated, so it's harder to. It won't be as noticed because he is the supreme controller of it, though it is separate. While in the generally most world religions, when they deify the Lord, he is the source of it, but he's not the controller of it. While in Nyaya, he's not the source of it, but he is the controller of it. So you only have one controller, that's God. While but where is the source of this material energy? They don't define, because they're not actually interested in getting to God. They're actually interested in just dissolving material life. So when material life is dissolved, then you come to the impersonal platform, then they consider, you know, job well done. So they're not interested beyond that. But in the world religion element, then you have that they're accepting God and accepting that you want to actually be with God. But then you have the difficulty is that even though he's the source of the material energy, he's not the controller of it, so someone else is controlling it. Then the difficulty comes is that that's what we're working with, so what's the connection to God? So how, by working with it, will you get to God? Because good work done in the material world gets good work seen in the material world. Good results seen in the material world. So how will good work done in the material world, if it's not technically under the control of God, then give eternal results? Right? So that means you would have to get a very nice result within the material world, therefore the concept of heaven. Right? So they're talking about heaven, not the spiritual world. Right? Which is very interesting, because I'm not actually, I wouldn't be able to, would you maybe know, in the first chapter, then you have Adam and Eve, right? And they're in the garden with God, moving with God, and then they decide to eat from this tree of life, and then they start acting differently. God is not pleased. And so then God kicks them out of the Garden of Eden. But now when it's talked about that by being a good practitioner of the Torah, of the five books, and you go to heaven, is that heaven Eden, or is that heaven somewhere else? Different opinions. And are these opinions just different persons, or are they divided by lines of reform, conservative? So what did the Hasid say? What about the Orthodox? You cannot. You can be. Orthodox say that. It starts there. All the rituals. No wonder Jesus had a problem. Oh my God. Right?
Abraham, the whole point of Judaism starting was because Abraham didn't like the deity worship of his father. Right? Because his father was a priest in Ur. And they had so many deities. And then he asked, you know, who's the supreme? And he said the sun god. So when his father went out one day, he took a stick and broke all the deities except the sun god, and then put the stick in the sun god's hand. And when his father came home, he said, "Who broke these deities?" He said, "He broke them." You know, like that. And he said, "He can't break them, he's stone." So then he said, "See, you know, he can't be God. So God is different than this, you know. Therefore they have the thing, even though they say he's a person, he's formless, right? You know, so it really makes a lot of sense, you know, the whole thing. So that means Abraham, you know, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, who all communed with God. And the Orthodox are following them. But you don't have to actually believe in God. You just have to follow the rituals that were established to be a perfect Jew. Okay. Now, what is the result of being a perfect Jew? You go to heaven. Okay, what's the result of being a perfect Jew and believing in God? Really? So, now if you don't believe in God, who's in control of heaven? Mrs. Goldberg, or... Wow, I never heard that one. So that's why they're the chosen people. And so then that is why a lot of American policy is actually made by Jews. Okay, so then that would mean then... So that would mean there was a severe misunderstanding in the leaders of the Third Reich, that the importance of Jews for universal, order. Wow, this is fun. Yes. Yeah, that's mentioned in the Bhavishya Purana. Adama and I think Havyavati. Those are the two. Because we're on the topic. See, now when Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden, right? And so then they had their sons Cain and Abel, right? Now when it was time for Cain, and now they were the original two people. And so then that would mean then them having Cain and Abel means now there's four people. But when it came time for Cain and Abel to be married, they married local village girls. No, but... But where did they come from? They were just part of the creation with the other animals. Okay, and Adam and Eve had been in the heavenly realm. Okay, who says they go back to Eden? That Eden is where you're actually trying to get back to. Who says that? They all say that. So heaven and Eden is the same place. Because, but do they like the idea that in Eden you're vegetarian? Because in Eden you're vegetarian. Big fish. Oh, the whales. And who catches these whales? The subhumans, right? Okay. I see, to do all the, wash the dishes and clean the bathrooms and everything. I see. But my point is that they're actually vegetarian in Eden. It's only after they eat the apple, then God curses them, then they're given meat and stuff to eat, which is only you find in the Torah, in the New Testament. I mean, in the books of the Christians on the Old Testament, those verses are removed. So that means in heaven there'll be no lox and bagels. They'll only have to eat cream cheese and stuff. Are they cool with that, or do they? You should eat meat. And what is that seventh day? Why on the day of rest then you should go to so much trouble? Isn't it easier to eat matzah? So that means that the communes where the people were vegetarian, now they're only vegetarian for 6 days. Because when I was there, they were vegetarian for 7 days. Should not smoke. So that means then, if you're doing anything good, you should be bad on the Sabbath. If you're doing anything bad, you should be good on the Sabbath.
Well, then it's good. Because they say, I heard something, but it's not the line usually, because they say if you eat whatever animal you eat, its soul becomes Jewish in the next 5 days.
Its soul becomes Jewish. That's interesting, because a goy can't become Jewish. So how is it
the animal can.
But the animal can. Wow. They've had 4,000 years to really screw up the philosophy here. Okay. This is fun. But the, okay, yeah, we won't get into that. Going back to the 600,000 that went into the desert, because technically, from what I've understood, those are the only Jewish souls. And so anyone more now, they're actually expansions or divisions of those souls. So do you actually know which person of the 600,000 that you're a division of? You know, it's like, you have to trace it. Okay. So we can see is that at least the one thing about these Vedic philosophies that are considered improper, they're consistent in their consistency. You know, what's wrong with it? It's always that. It doesn't keep switching. You know, it's more consistent. So that's what makes it, how do you say? Yeah. Okay. Okay, so establishing Akash is eternal. It's not made of parts, so it's like other atoms. It's eternal. But at the same time, you can only perceive it because of sound. Right? Because the other elements, the mind, where was it? Okay, time, direction, soul, and mind, they're not dependent upon sound at all. They don't have sound as their quality. So Akash is the only thing that would have that. But we get it from the Shastra just in the creation, how it goes. So I'm not sure we'll see how his creation goes. Yes? Anything? Direction and time. Direction and time are also imperceptible substances. And they are likewise single, eternal and all-pervading. Direction is inferred on the basis of such conceptions as here, there, near, far, on this side, by that way, and so on. Time is inferred from the concepts now, today, tomorrow, past, present, future, older, younger, and so forth. Although space, direction, and time are singular and all-pervading, invisible, and partless, they are spoken of as many because of certain limiting conditions, known as upadis. For example, when the all-pervading, indivisible space is limited by the walls of a jar, a space is known as the space of the jar, gataksha. Oh, gatakasha, right? The space in the jar, the akasha in the jar.
In the same way, direction and time are also thought of as multiple because of the notions of variety and specifically expressed as east, west, 1 hour, 2 hours, and so on. Does that make sense? So even though they're indivisible, then they still become defined. They develop these upadis because of their usage. But now the usage we see is in comparison to the upadis of the atoms. Does that make sense? Because these others, there's no atoms. So the upadis are the paramanu is the small infinitesimal particle that is indivisible, right? So you have your earth, water, fire, air atoms. The combinations of those then make up what you see in the world. So then, in reference to that, so that is taken on upadis or forms or designations, right? Let me see. Yeah. Certain limiting conditions, upadis. So those are based on what are the forms and conditions of the earth, water, fire, air atoms. Does that make sense? Like we'll say the space in this room here, but the room is made out of earth, water, fire, air. Does that make sense? Then by that we limit the akash, right? The direction is also limited by the world that is manifest that we see. Right, the sun comes up on that side, which is a manifestation of atoms. So therefore, that's the east, and the opposite's the west. Does that make some sense? Right? And then time in that will be based on the activities that will be formed with the upadis, the body and other things that you're dealing with. Does that make sense? So in other words, to be able to match with, because otherwise if it couldn't do that, how you would match them? Right? How would you match the atoms with time, direction, and space? Unless they also had forms or were able to work alongside the same forms. Does that make sense? In other words, if something has a relationship, there must be something in common. Right? So the commonality is forms are created, and then the ether, the direction and time, then are defined by those forms that are created. Right, even though they're not definable, but they still are. In the same way, the atoms aren't definable, but they are when they take forms. Right? So far, he hasn't said. We'll probably find out why the forms happen. But up to now, that's what would be the cause? Why would there be forms? Okay. Does this make sense? Yes. Yeah. Single. Yeah. Direction. It's just means. In other words, just as space is there, the direction would be there. But it's made by upadi. Then you say it's here. Or is this much space? Time is just there. But then you have you're applying your perception on time to a particular limited area. So therefore you call it past, present, or future, or like that. Or young, old, those kind of things.
What we hear from the Vedas about four directions, or eight directions, or ten directions, they're just taken as upadis.
Yeah, these would be, in other words, when the Vedas talking about direction, they would take them as upadis. In other words, it's like this, it would be like this. You have cleanliness. Cleanliness travels by touch. Your hands are dirty. If you touch something, that becomes dirty. If something touches that dirty, it becomes dirty. Okay? But by tradition, how that's practiced by great acharyas, right? And how we see Krishna and his pastimes, how it's practiced. You eat on the floor, then depending upon the space, you either wash just the area where you ate, or if it's a small place, then the whole area. But you ate on the floor, it's counted that it's just dirty there. Now, if someone sits and by their mental speculation thinks it travels by touch,
then the floor is touching the walls, and the walls the ceiling, you know, and the buildings, you know, and that's the building, the foundation, the ground. So when I eat lunch, then the whole planet becomes contaminated. You understand how the logic works? So that's how these systems come up. Is somebody very intelligent, but what we might call too intelligent or over-intelligent, then they somehow or another think of things that aren't important. Things that are important are not their meditation. Things that are important, they don't think about. Does that make sense? Wouldn't they get tired of whale after a while? They come back here. They don't stay there. Wouldn't they get bored of whale all the time? What can you make with whale? You know what I'm saying?
Soap.
What do you make with soap?
Yeah.
At least a bubble bath instead of like this. Whale. Now, one thing is there. If they're taking this 7 day, you have to eat the meat. Then what about when they were in the desert and they had the manna? Right? Now that was vegetarian. And they ate that for 40 years. Every Sabbath. Then when they got tired of eating manna and they wanted flesh to eat, then all these birds came falling out of the sky. And they very happily picked them up, started eating them. And then those who ate them, they all died. And so it kind of made very strongly the point God was making, be happy with the manna and don't ask for meat. So when God arranges food, why do they think it'll be whales? Plus, if it fell out of the sky, no one would get squash. You know, like that. Oh, of course, we bring the barbarians to go do the fishing. So that means they're living on the same Mediterranean coastline or something, just on a more... Yeah, because in Eden, you don't hear about an ocean. That's fun. Whale.
The origin
of the same. Have a whale of a time. Have a whale of a time, yeah. Whale burgers? Okay. Okay, so now, so that means 5, 6, 7 was direction and time of elements, right? Substance. Okay, what are we getting here? Substance is before 9 dravyas. Okay, so 9 kinds of substances. The 9 dravyas. Okay. The 9 qualities. So he just deals with 9 instead of the other was 12. Okay. So the soul, the 8th kind of substance. The soul, or Atma, is also considered to be eternal and all-pervading and is the substratum of the phenomena of consciousness. According to Vaisheshika, so just like the ether is the substrata, and what you can perceive is sound, right? So in the same way as the soul is the substrata, and then they're taking consciousness to be what can be perceived. According to Vaisheshika, there are 2 kinds of souls, individual and supreme. Individual souls are known as jivatma, and the supreme soul is known as Paramatma, or Ishwara. Okay, so at least they have an Ishwara. The supreme soul is inferred to be the creator of the world in the same manner as has been explained in the discussion of Nyaya philosophy. In contrast to the supreme soul, the individual soul is perceived as possessing mental qualities such as I'm happy, I'm sorry, and so on. Individual souls do not perceive other individual souls, but they do infer their existence
in the manner described in the Nyaya section.
Okay, but in other words, you can see that something's going on, so you infer that there's another living entity.
Okay, so here then they're taking, so they do have the Supreme Soul, but they don't take them as separate. So there's a good chance here that there's going to be some kind of thing that if you don't separate God and the living entities, at some point you're going to expect that they become the same thing.
Okay. If there's any questions, you just at any time raise hands. Okay.
Mind. The mind is considered to be the ninth kind of substance. It is the eternal faculty of the individual soul and the soul's qualities, such as pleasure and pain. Like the soul, the mind is atomic and indivisible, and there is one in each body. The existence of the mind is not perceived but is inferred from the following propositions. First, it is apparent that external sense faculties are necessary for the perception of external objects of the world. Likewise, an internal sense faculty is required for the perception of internal objects, such as soul, cognition, feeling, pleasure, pain, and so on. Those others are qualities, okay? The mind is the eternal sense faculty. Second, it is apparent that the five external senses may all be in contact with the respective objects simultaneously, but not all of these perceptions are received at the same time. This demonstrates that there must be some other agent besides the external senses that both limits the number of received perceptions to one perception at a time, and that orders the perceptions in sequential succession. In other words, although two or more external senses may be simultaneously receiving data, only that which is being attended to is actually perceived. Attention, therefore, represents the coordination of the mind with the senses. And every perception requires the contact of the mind with an object by means of the senses. Okay, you see what's happening here is that one is that just as the senses deal with the external sense objects, then what is the subtle points that aren't perceived by the sense objects, that has to be perceived by something subtle. So that's the mind. Does that make sense? Like that. The other aspect is that all the senses are bringing information at once, but why is it all of them aren't being dealt with at once? So that means something's controlling it, that it reduces it down to one, you know, and then takes an order of what's important, what it wants to deal with. So that then is seen as the mind. Right? So then attention or focus then is the coordination of the mind with an object by means of the senses. Because if the mind is not focused on something, then it's not going to perceive that, yes? The mind is very mechanical.
Yeah, but it also said that the internet is our best friend.
Yes, I mean, it's best friend if it does its mechanical duties in accordance with reality. And it's our worst enemy if it does its mechanical processes with illusion. So in other words, the senses are perceiving the sense objects. But now if you see that in connection with the Supreme, the mind is then friendly. If the mind is perceiving the sense objects not in connection with the Supreme, then it becomes the enemy. The mind doesn't have a separate existence. It is a material element. But the thing is the soul, because of their consciousness, then they're going to be inclined towards seeing reality or seeing illusion. Because reality means I'm servant. Right? And so therefore the Lord's pleasure is my pleasure. Illusion means I'm the controller and enjoyer, right? So that would mean then, what if you pick the illusory option, then the mind is going to function according to the modes of nature as under the control of the external energy, right? So we're thinking we're independent, but that's simply because
we identify with the mind, which does whatever it does, and because the soul can't perceive other living entities directly, only indirectly. You know, it means that the others, their feelings, this, that, it's all indirect. That, therefore, it seems unique, and it becomes your identity. But otherwise, everybody's mind is functioning in the same way. Does that make sense? It just happens to maybe be connected with some other things. You have 8,400,000 basic, you could say, general, your perceptions that the mind could take on its attraction, accepts or rejects the sense objects. You know, what it likes, what it doesn't like. So at any one stage, it's somewhere within those 8,400,000, if it's uncontrolled. You understand? So different people are at different stages. So how many people you know? Right? So that means that how much are we aware of what they feel and think? So our experience then seems very unique, and in this way we think we're very individual. But we're doing the same thing that everybody else did. That's actually what you're supposed to learn from history, is that everybody's doing the same thing. Right? So now those who bring that doing by their own desire to uplift themselves, then they move from just a general lower level of consciousness to something higher. Right? Because then they are bringing, by intelligence, by knowledge and association, they're bringing these things in line with what is elevating, because it's authorized by, elevated persons. Right? And so this can come in the, so this is called piety. And this piety can come in the form of karma that you get, a certain, you could say, you know, facilities, perceivable facilities and perceivable experiences that one would call nice or good, right? This is where the problem comes there, where we're just saying in that rabbinical definition, is that things don't go right here in the world, because if something goes wrong, it cannot be their fault, right? It has to be someone else's fault, right? So the whole problem comes is that then the inability to understand the law of karma, to avoid, you know, in other words, to avoid rejecting God altogether, they have to at least say he's a little bit incompetent. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the problem comes up is that they're actually, due to the lack of knowledge, they don't understand is that the situation you're in is simply because of your own work, your own doing. Right? And so what comes from the previous you can't do anything about, but you can deal with the present. So they do also deal with the present. They don't understand that they're saying that, okay, if I do activities in the present, that will give me results in the future that are good. Right? But what they're missing is that in the same logic, that would mean activities I've done in the past, that is the cause of my good or bad today. Just as the activities I do today, that gives me my good or bad in the future. Right? So they're looking at only one side, you know, of a complete process. And because of their lack of understanding this, then they blame God. They don't blame themselves. Now, one thing is now, what about the vegetables they eat on Sabbath? Do those then vegetables then also become Jews in the next life? I see. Okay, now what if you ate a lobster on Sabbath? Now would that lobster become Jewish? Or would that Jew that ate the lobster on Sabbath go to hell? That's my point, but the point is by eating it, would it be elevated?
No, probably they would become elevated.
I see. Okay. And when they get to heaven, do they still have to wear the tefillin and everything? Or that kind of stuff's over?
No.
Huh? Okay, so they don't do all that stuff.
Okay. Okay, a couple more minutes.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Additionally, if the mind were not a partless entity, then there would be simultaneous contact of the many parts of the mind with many senses, and many perceptions would subsequently appear at one time. The fact this never happens proves that the mind is a partless, atomic, and internal sense faculty of perception. In other words, it's saying, because it's only one, means how you're defining it as it can't be divided, is that if it could be divided, that means it could do many functions at once. And then you'd be getting many perceptions at once. But since you only get one perception at one time, then that proves that, according to Vaisheshika, then that proves that therefore the mind is atomic. Right? It also cannot be like the atoms, it cannot be broken down. Does that make sense? Yes.
Is it a fact that we can only get one?
Only one perception at a time. That's generally what happens. Is we do, because see, what means that it does in general. You're always going to have its focus, because otherwise, if there's not a focus, how do you have a conversation? And the whole idea of rasa is interaction. So unless there's some common sense, there's common thing to talk about, how is there a relation? So there's five things going at once. How do you describe five things at once? You can't. You can only describe one thing at a time. Therefore, the mind needs to deal with one thing at a time. Other things are there, so you can fill them out one at a time. You talk about, you know, the weather was very pleasant and very warm as the sun came through, you know, the very light, you know, the leaves of the trees and that, and warmed the ground and all that, and the golden colors. Then now you're talking about that, and then the wind would blow the leaves, so the light would dance on the ground, you know, and then the feeling on the skin and in your hair was like this, and that brought the fragrances from the fields. And, you know what I'm saying? They describe everything, but they describe it one at a time, because otherwise, how do you have relationship? So that's the common thing. There's one thing. You know, you're there looking off this way, your friend's looking over that way, and then the breeze blows, and then your friend goes, ooh, that's nice. And so then you're perceiving that, but it's not the prominent one. In other words, all the senses are bringing in everything, but the mind reduces it down to what's important for you at the moment. So you were looking off in the distance, but your friend said breeze, so you go from sight to touch. And then moving to touch, then now you're both on the same perception, so now you can have a relationship and discuss. Right? They're going, ooh, nice and cool, and then you say yes, and, you know, like this and that. You know, then you'll start off, oh, it should be like this all the time, or, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like that. So therefore, that's the function that the mind does. That's why it's the controller of the senses. The intelligence is the controller of the senses, and that is the intelligence. It's by intelligence that senses work, right? They have to discern things like that. So that is intelligence. But what is important for you at the moment, what according to your values, that's the mind. So therefore, the mind is the control. So the mind is the one that's actually controlling it. The other one's off. It's just like the car is being driven by the chauffeur, but the car is going wherever the guy in the back seat wants to go. Does that make sense? So the intelligence is managing the senses, but what you perceive is managed by the mind.
So on that level of intelligence, I mean, it seems that there is a basic perception of all five at once.
Yeah, there is.
But then the mind focuses.
The mind focuses, because it's like right now is they're sending up bombs over in the direction, but we don't care about that. So within sound, we bring it down to the conversation. You know, unless it's really loud, then suddenly we'll stop this and go, what was that? You know what I'm saying? So otherwise, then how would you have interaction? Then you're just experiencing things, you know, like that. So the point is, you're experiencing in relationship to relationships. That's is very important. So that's why the personal is the main. Well, they're taking it, they're just going to the thing where everything's experienced at once, it all becomes one and there's no differentiation. And then that, because you've gotten rid of the upadis, so everything's gone, so therefore then that is the Brahman understanding. But the point is even within Brahman there's differentiation. But they don't understand this because it's not there. They're Vaisheshika, they're not Uttari Mimamsa. So they don't understand. Okay, is that good?
Okay, so then tomorrow we'll do the category of quality, the 24 gunas.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.